Welcome. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. And as always, we love to bring you great information in natural medicine today. And myself and Dr. Zamperone, my co-hosts, have been working in this field for a long time. Me since actually 1964. And Dr. Z came on board about 20 years later. So it seems like time flies. I don't know if it seems like that in your life, but it certainly seems like that in my life, because Dr. Zamperone and I had Chinatown Adventure, which we have twice a year, and that was last Sunday. And when we look back at the years that we've been doing that, we take people into Chinatown. We do Qigong in the park. And we go to underground areas where they actually formulate herbal medicine from specific kinds of herbs. We also have a sit-down sacred Chinese tea ceremony. And on Facebook/Natural Nurse, we posted a video, not a video, an album of shots, you know, photos of the adventure, just so you can get a sense of what goes on there. But we realized that it was probably the 25th year, because when we started doing that, my children were young, who are now getting close to 40, and Dr. Z was not even married yet, and now his second child is starting college next year. So that's the parameter that we looked at. Wow, we're still doing this, and it's got to be a long time, because the kids have actually come and grown, and wow. So that's why you have to really grab life every single day and live it to the fullest and enjoy every minute, because it really is a fleeting experience. And one of the ways you can do that is by taking care of your health, yourself, your family. And what we're finding is that as long as I've been doing this, we talk about natural medicine being the first intervention that should be used really in all situations, the first intervention. And then, of course, there are definitely times when you might need more aggressive and more dangerous interventions. But if we go first with something that is less dangerous and usually more efficacious, such as changing diet, looking at your stress patterns in your life, before we ever jump on the take a pharmaceutical bandwagon. And that's why we're so happy to have our guest here today. We will be having Dr. Alexis Hugelmeier on as a guest. And Dr. Hugelmeier is the medical director and osteopathic family physician at the SUA Center for Natural Healthcare in Riverhead. Dr. Alexis is the daughter of a critical care physician and special education teacher, which shaped her early experience in life. And then she attended undergraduate school at Villanova University and studied comprehensive science pre-med and bioethics, and attended medical school at New York College of Osteopathic Medicine in Old Westbury with an emphasis in family medicine. Dr. Alexis focuses on an old-fashioned medical model as a full-spectrum family physician who can treat most medical and physical conditions and see any person of any age, where she can develop lifelong relationships in the process, which is very different from what's going on in a lot of modern medicine today. This medicine model is reminiscent of the past, when doctors spent time with patients, listening to and taking care of every aspect, not just writing prescriptions. And Dr. Hugelmeier is board certified in family medicine and osteopathic manipulation, and has served as both a hospitalist and inpatient primary care. She's been deeply involved in developing the family medicine internship training program at Peconic Bay Medical Center, and served as the Administrative Director of Medical Education and Director of Traditional Rotating Internship and Community Wellness. She is now deeply involved in the SUA Center, that's S-U-A-H, SUA Center for Natural Healthcare, bringing together advanced training and practice methods, along with integrating best medical practices of conventional as well as complementary and integrative medicine, to offer patients a choice and a voice in their own health care. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Alexis.
Good morning, Ellen. Thank you so much for having me.
To me, I am very excited to actually meet you, and we'll be seeing each other at the Naval Expo. That'll be this Sunday coming up. That's, you can find out more at navalexpo.com. Everyone is invited. It's a full day of learning about natural medicine with many speakers all day long. Both myself and Dr. Alexis are presenters there. But tell us what started you on your path of becoming a physician, Dr. Alexis.
Well, I always knew that I wanted to help people from a very young age. My father was a physician, and I worked in his office. I knew that I wanted to get into the health-related field. Originally thought I wanted to be an obstetrician, gynecologist, because that was where I had done most of my volunteering as a high school teenage student, you know, eager to get into pre-medicine. But it wasn't until I was in medical school and I was doing my clinical rotations that I determined that I think family medicine and whole health and wellness was really what I wanted to focus on. I had been rotating through all the different specialties, primary care, pediatric surgery, and what I found consistently was that, you know, there's truly been a disconnect between patients and the physicians, and I wasn't happy with what I was seeing, and I was kind of looking for more of an old-fashioned approach, more of a patient-physician relationship where I could spend time talking to and listening to patients and taking care of truly their wellness, not just their illness, and taking care of their families, which is how family medicine traditionally was conducted. It wasn't until my third year of medical school that I met and really became close working with my mentors, Drs. Paul and John Capobianco out in Glen Cove. And it was then that I was, you know, I saw that I could have the type of practice that I envisioned, you know, as a teenager who was, you know, wanted to help people. These men are truly helping people. I thought to myself, this is really effective. This is true health care.
So you saw a completely different model. Like instead of people coming in, just talking about like, okay, this hurts. Okay, here's a prescription. Goodbye in 8 minutes. You saw that there was an interview process, that there was a getting to know the person, that there was a looking for the cause of the problem and change and working with the patient over time to, you know, integrate changes that would relieve the entire condition if possible.
It was so much more than even just that. What I immediately recognized was the intimate and the relationship that had already been established for their patients who had been seeing them for many years. These doctors knew their patients inside and out, and they would know exactly what was right for them, to heal whatever was going on. They knew that it was April and their allergy season was coming, and these were the natural things that they would have to try, you know, before they talked about taking medicine. They knew their patients, they knew their families, their whole story. And that was a very different, than what I had seen in other modern medical practices. But then in addition, on the intake, when I was meeting the new patients with the doctors for the first time, the intake process was so different than what I had been seeing in terms of these doctors were asking about the patient's spiritual well-being. They were asking about their social interactions. What causes you stress? You know, what do you do on an average day? And it was really logical medicine. It was really questions that make the difference between health and wellness for so many patients and I think are so often overlooked. I say to patients all the time, we are the way we are because of the way we do the things that we do. And it's so true. I mean, if you're sitting, you know, when you're sitting at a desk all day and you're crossing your legs, yeah, you know, one hip is going to hurt more than the other. The way that you conduct your life, the way that you interact with others, how much stress you carry, whether you love or hate your job, those are all things that are foundational and may predispose you to illness or may prevent you from getting better. So these doctors were really truly practicing the osteopathic philosophy, which is whole person, patient-centered, And I was amazed. I really, at that point, I didn't ever think I was going to find what I thought true healthcare was. And when I saw that in, you know, this was 2003 at the time, that there are these doctors who are actually doing the medicine that I thought I would be doing, I was just driven to go in that direction, and I spent as much time with them as I could, and I learned from them. I still do to this day.
It's such a blessing that you were able to find those kind of mentors, and it seems like that model should at least be promoted within every medical education so that people know that that's a viable option and actually, in reality, a much better way to work towards being a healer if that was your reason for going into medicine.
It's true. It's true. It's funny. I say to patients, medical residents and students who come and rotate through my office, you know, as a core rotation, you have to do family medicine. So those who choose to come and work with me, I see their eyes, and I remember that happening to me when I was in their position. And I see them saying, wow, this is really what I thought when I went into medical school and I thought, I'm going to help people. This is what they had in mind. It wasn't the 6-minute visit where you have to ask questions, listen to answers, do an exam, make a decision, explain it to the patient, then write it all down, and you have about, 8 minutes to do that. You can't do it well. You can't make good decisions. You can't have a relationship where the patients feel like they can say what they need to say in that short amount of time. And that's not, that's an unfortunate circumstance of medical economics today, but it's the way that most medical practices are going. And so I see the young doctors and the young residents and students coming in here, and I see that fire in their eyes, and I see them say, wow, this is what I thought it was going to be like. And it just makes me so excited to continue to teach them.
And it gives them inspiration in terms of continuing on and perhaps making family medicine their specialty.
Absolutely, absolutely. Family medicine has kind of, become one of the least desirable specialties in terms of reimbursement, in terms of lifestyle, because you're on call a lot, you work hard, you work long days, and like I said, because of economics, most modern family practitioners are seeing 40 patients a day. So a lot of people are, a lot of medical students are choosing not to go into family medicine and opting for higher paying specialties that have better lifestyles, shift work or specialties where there is no call. So it's nice to see them get excited and get passionate about wellness, because that's what family medicine is. That's what true prevention and primary care is teaching your patients how to stay well and how to prevent them from becoming sick. Taking care of the patients when they're healthy is so much more important than taking care. We're great at taking care of patients when they're sick. That's easy. It's teaching them how to be well and how to prevent illness. That's the time-consuming part, and it's the part that's missing.
Now, I want to ask you something. Since you brought up seasonal allergies, and I bet you're seeing some of that, we have a very specific protocol that worked wonders for those people, and I'm wondering, what would you, if someone came in and they said that's their problem, you probably would not just give them a prescription for, something like Claritin, although that's over the counter. But what would you do? What would be your first question to them? What would be the protocol that would be set up, even for something like that, which is not life-threatening? It's more like an annoying kind of health issue.
Absolutely. It's a quality of life issue, and that's where I think the educational piece comes in. A lot of people go to the doctor with a complaint, and they walk out with a prescription, but no real answers. What can I do? How can I change? How can I modify my life so that this doesn't affect me so significantly? And with seasonal allergies, it's a tremendous problem, especially on Long Island. It's very windy. Every year the allergies change and people really truly suffer. Osteopathic medicine is DOs, Doctors of Osteopathy, are taught to utilize hands-on techniques called osteopathic manipulation. It is my most effective tool because it actually allows me to manipulate the structure so that it works properly, or so that I can help it towards its normal healing capacity. The body comes equipped to heal most things. You're able to recover from illnesses. You're able to heal traumas. And all that we as doctors do is help the body towards that natural tendency. But osteopaths, we have a special unique tool, which helps the body towards that healing process. It supports the body in that healing process. So a patient with seasonal allergies, first and foremost, I would use hands-on techniques to help normalize lymphatic drainage, decrease tissue inflammation and swelling, and work so that the body can help clear these toxins and allergens from their systems. We would talk most definitely about quality of sleep, exercise, diet. There may be some things in the diet that are contributing towards mucus production.
Some of those things that you would imagine, or would you do a whole food allergy test, or would you just try eliminating, or what would you suspect might be involved in that?
First and foremost, a lot of people are just in general dehydrated. Most people don't drink nearly as much water as they're supposed to, and water is your number one detoxifier. A lot of people come to me asking about cleanses and detoxes, and I think in certain instances they are valuable, but if you're getting sleep, if you're exercising and you're drinking enough water, your body has the capacity to detox on its own. And so starting with hydration and starting with the typical offenders such as dairy. You know, I would never suggest that a person who's not, allergic to dairy eliminate it as a food group. But certainly during the allergic season, the peak season for seasonal allergies, whether it's spring or fall, I would have the patient, you know, cut back or minimize the amount of dairy that they take in and supplement with other, you know, obtain their vitamins and nutrients from other sources.
See, that's such a great suggestion because of my clinical experience that often gives them almost 100% relief to where there's so much less mucus production. And
absolutely,
they never knew that that could help them so much. And when we look at that kind of intervention, which is a, you know, rather mild lifestyle change, mm-hmm, that what is the danger of trying it versus trying a drug that may dry up your sinuses but give you migraine headaches or ulcers? So it's a fabulous suggestion.
The patients who do well in natural practices like ours or holistic, whatever you want to call it, traditional practices like ours, sure, we can, you know, if you walk in here and say, just fix me, I don't want to do anything, I don't want to have to work, I don't want to have to change my lifestyle, you know, those are the patients who do better just taking the medicine as needed or during their peak season. But the patients who really want to have control and know what to do, teaching them how to prevent the problem is the first step. And there's also, you know, a whole spectrum of natural supplements that we can use, vitamin C, quercetin, bioflavonoids, homeopathic remedies that really do help decrease inflammation in the upper airway cells. So those are the first, you know, the first line of defense.
What homeopathic, if you have one off the top of your head, would you sometimes recommend? I know it might depend if the person has thick mucus or thin mucus or early morning symptoms or night symptoms. That's one of the beautiful things with homeopathy.
Right. Actually, you know, that brings a good point, you know, lifestyle in the home, how you modify your home for, you know, for allergy seasons. You know, a lot of people open the windows, they start dusting out their curtains, they start vacuuming rugs, and these are all kinds of lifestyle things that certainly can exacerbate allergy season. Sometimes I think allergy testing is helpful in helping you determine, you know, how much time you should spend outside or when you should try to keep the windows closed. But I don't typically send patients for allergy testing right off the bat. We see how we can do, you know, with the simple lifestyle modifications.
See, I love discussing this because I find sometimes people will wait until they have late stage cancer to mm-hmm. seek out a naturally oriented physician. And I think
right.
that's a big mistake because that's not the time when any intervention shines. But in something like this, which is not life-threatening, but very, very substantially interfering with someone's well-being, mm-hmm. natural medicine can completely change their life. And it's such the best thing to try first.
And it's funny that you say that too, because most people only go to the doctor when they're not well. And knowing about becoming educated and informed about staying healthy, preventing things like cancer and diabetes, it requires a lot of education. It's not something that we just born with and your parents, you know, tell you how to prevent diabetes. Yeah, everybody kind of knows you should exercise and kind of knows that, you know, you should avoid chips and soda, but the educational piece, the time that it takes to teach patients that, you know, the things that they're putting in their bodies, the products that they're using in their homes, the lack of exercise and the sedentary lifestyle, these are the things that most likely are causing us to become ill down the road. And if you wait until you're sick, then in a lot of cases, you know, you're working backwards instead of doing everything that you can to prevent ever becoming ill, which is the more logical and more effective approach. Learn what you need to do to not get sick. Spend the time, invest in taking care of yourself so that, you know, you have the most, the best likelihood that you will not get ill down the road.
It makes so much more sense. And when we look at the Chinese medical model, like we talked about on our Chinatown excursion the other day, what happens is that the physicians at that time in ancient China were paid by the family as long as everyone stayed well.
I love it.
So, of course, there was much more interaction. Now, if you happen to be the physician of a royal family, what would happen is if anyone in the family got ill, your head gets chopped off. So it's a completely different model of being very active to keep everyone as well as possible.
And if the modern medical economic system of reimbursement worked that way, where doctors were reimbursed and in a sense rewarded for how many patients they kept well, we would have a very different society. The health of our society would be, I think, substantially improved, because the way that doctors get reimbursed now is when we have to take care of a very complex patient, when the patients get sick and we have to go to the hospital and take care of them, that's what we're reimbursed for. We're not reimbursed for taking the time to teach them how to control their blood sugar or how to exercise. In fact, some insurance companies don't cover preventive services at all, which is just a travesty, I believe.
So we're going to take 1 minute or so break here, or a few minute break, to listen to the Natural Medicine Chest. And when we come back, we're going to continue our discussion today, fascinating discussion, with Dr. Lexis. And I do want to give you where to find out more about her, and that would be at thesuacenter.com. And we're talking to Dr. Alexis Hugelmeyer. So thank you so much for being our guest, and stand by. We'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
On this edition of The Natural Medicine Chest, we'll discuss an herb we all know and love, cinnamon.
Ah, the spicy, sweet smell of cinnamon. Everyone recognizes the familiar aroma of this common kitchen spice. But did you know that cinnamon is an exotic plant bark with a long history of medicinal use in many countries throughout the world? Cinnamon was listed as an herb with medicinal properties in Chinese literature as early as 2700 BC. It is described in the Chinese medical text, the Tang Materia Medica, written in 659 AD. Cinnamon also enjoys traditional use in Ayurvedic medicine, the ancient healing art of India. It is mentioned in the Book of Moses and has been cultivated in Ceylon and Sri Lanka since 1200 AD, where much of the world's supply is still grown.
In Europe, cinnamon was regarded as a rare and precious spice. Many pharmaceutical substances, such as cough syrups and digestive tonics, contain cinnamon. It was also used as an incense and in perfumes. According to Chamberlain, writing in France in 1887, cinnamon possesses the greatest antiseptic properties. Cinnamon is gathered from the dried inner bark of the branches of a small tropical evergreen laurel tree. The bark is peeled off, and as the pieces are dried, they curl up into quills. These are the common cinnamon sticks that are used in herb teas and for baking.
In Chinese medicine, cinnamon is one of the most widely used warming herbs to aid in circulation and digestion. It is a common ingredient in small amounts in tea used for nausea during pregnancy. It is also used following delivery to decrease hemorrhage. Cinnamon raises vitality, warms and stimulates all the vital functions of the body, counteracts congestion, improves the digestive system, relieves abdominal spasms, and aids in peripheral circulation. The essential oils contained in cinnamon include eugenol, cinnaminic aldehyde, methyl eugenol, tannins, and mannitol, which give cinnamon its sweet flavor. It also contains cinnazenolin and cinnazenolol, which are both known insecticides.
Try putting some liquid soap and cinnamon in a spray bottle and use on plants as an organic bug repellent. Cinnamon is also included in many medicinal recipes that are used for lice, scabies, and other skin parasites. Cinnamon has antifungal, antiviral, and bactericidal activities. It has been shown to suppress E. coli, Staphylococcus, and Candida albicans.
So, listeners, the next time you inhale that sweet, spicy aroma, remember there's more to cinnamon than meets the nose as you reach into your natural medicine chest.
Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse. Always so happy to be here at Progressive Radio Network, that's PRN.FM. And one of the reasons that I love being associated with Gary Null's station, Progressive Radio Network, is that there are so many excellent shows that you can hear really basically day or night, 24 hours a day, on the archives, including the show that we're doing with our guest today. Because I know many of you would like to know about the SUA Center as a reference point to use for your primary medicine. And the SUA Center is located in Riverhead, Long Island, so it's local to Long Islanders. I'd also like to tell you that you can get together with myself and Dr. Eugene Zamperone, and also Dr. Alexis Hugelmeyer, our guest today. One thing is you can visit us at the Naval Expo. That's navalexpo.com, navalexpo.com. And twice a year at the Huntington Hilton in Long Island, there is a full day-long event. There's about, many tables, like almost 100 tables where you can try all different natural remedies and get free massages. And then all day long, there are 5 lectures going on every single hour. And all of them are free to you. You just walk into whichever one you'd like. I would say the only challenging part of the entire day is that there's so many excellent lectures going on simultaneously that, you kind of have to choose, although you can choose to wander around and go to all of them. That's another thing that you may want to try to do. And then you can meet people personally and see how the energetic interaction is for you in terms of a practitioner that you would like to be with. Then we also have lots of herb classes this year. A lot of the herb classes will be at the Restoration Farm, and you can go on their website at restorationfarm.com and look at the herb classes, where we'll be going outside, gathering edible and medicinal plants, and learning how to make them into medicine, actually gathering them and making our own tinctures, extracts, salves, poultices, and other uses of natural wild plants that you can use for yourself and your family. It can just be fun if you'd like to learn it, or it may save your life one day. You never know. It is a wonderful survival technique. And we have lots of other events, so you can go to naturalnurse.com under schedule. We have one class coming up October 10th, which is great for health practitioners because it does grant 6 CEU credits in continuing education, and it is going to be at the University of Bridgeport, and it is called the 3rd Annual Natural and Integrative Medicine Symposium.
I know,
and we have now actually begun registration for that event as well. So, I want to come back to our wonderful guest today, Dr. Alexis Hugelmeyer. She is the medical director and osteopathic family physician at the SUA Center for Natural Health Care in Riverhead. And she has been involved in setting up a clinic where many of these techniques that she's discussing will be available to patients at the SUA Center for Natural Healthcare. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks again for having me.
Now, we went through some of the things about osteopathic medicine, but we could talk about that a little bit more, because I know that DOs, which is the ending rather than MDs on osteopathic medicines, really do function completely within conventional settings in terms of writing prescriptions, doing surgery, working in hospitals. So they really have very similar education and credentials and scope of practice to a medical doctor.
That's true. Osteopathic physicians receive almost identical training to allopathic physicians. The differences lie in the philosophy and in the additional training that osteopaths get in musculoskeletal medicine and the connection between the structure and the body's function. The primary philosophy of osteopathic medicine is that the body is a unit, that you can't just look at the GI tract if your stomach hurts, or that you can't just look at, you know, the knee if the leg hurts, that you have to take into consideration that all parts are connected and that you can't separate one out from the other. The other principle that we spoke about earlier was that the body has the capacity to heal itself, and that anything that a physician, that any physician does, is only helping the body towards that natural tendency to heal itself, whether it's medication or surgery or, you know, lifestyle modifications. You're only really assisting the body in doing what it's going to naturally do anyway. You're helping speed recovery or decrease the severity of certain symptoms. The hands-on piece is called osteopathic manipulation. And that's a set of several different techniques and approaches to really reducing whatever structural restrictions are impeding the body's own healing process. A lot of patients come in and say, "Oh, I have back pain, and I heard that you're going to fix my back pain." And really, we tell our patients here, nothing that we do is going to fix your back. What it's going to do is going to relieve whatever structural impediment there is to your body healing itself. For example, most back pain, it will get better in 6 months if you do nothing. Your back, most back issues will heal naturally over time, even if you don't do physical therapy or take anti-inflammatories. But we do look to, you know, relieve discomfort and resume our normal activities sooner than later, of course. So the osteopathic manipulation is intended to reduce those restrictions, decrease muscle spasm, optimize circulation, encourage or assist lymphatic drainage in terms of, you know, clearing infections. And so in a sense, we're not curing. We're just, again, utilizing another tool to assist the body in healing itself.
So when you described your education, Dr. Hugelmeier, versus a medical doctor, you actually get trained in even pharmaceutical medicine and things like surgery. You know, you do a full rotation, and of course there are many DOs who I think really practice exactly the same as a medical doctor and don't actually integrate too much physical medicine in their practice.
That's true. Actually, most osteopaths practice the same type of approach that an MD would practice. There are osteopathic neurosurgeons, there are osteopathic orthopedists and cardiologists, and typically there is not a common utilization of that tool. And I could have to be honest, I don't understand why. It's something that every DO learns how to do. It's something that every type of physician could utilize as one of their tools in helping to restore balance and to restore function to the structure. And in fact, only about, you know, maybe 2-4% of practicing osteopaths utilize the hands-on approach and you just use it as one of the tools in their arsenal. For me, it's fundamental. Almost every patient, you know, is treated with hands-on osteopathic manipulation because it's we know that it works. We see that it works. But yes, it's true that most DOs do practice more traditional, more like a traditional allopathic physician. Although I do believe that most osteopaths, because of our training, inherently are more holistic. I think by nature are more likely to choose a conservative approach prior to, you know, initiating more invasive or
severe treatment modalities.
Well, that was an interesting comparison. So now let me also ask you, because some people who are listening might think that how you described spinal manipulation and hands-on therapy is similar to what they're experiencing under their chiropractic physician. So in what way do DOs differentiate from, let's say, DCs, chiropractors?
Absolutely. Actually, a lot of the techniques that osteopaths use, chiropractors also use. I personally don't do any cracking techniques, but there are DOs who do. I think that the primary difference is in terms of the training and in terms of, again, the philosophy. Chiropractic philosophy, although a lot of chiropractors do musculoskeletal stuff, is really centered on spinal alignment. And the relationship between the spine and the rest of the body, which of course is fundamental as well. You know, our techniques do utilize some spinal techniques, but we also use, you know, lymphatic techniques. We use musculoskeletal. I have to say, in terms of the hands-on treatment approach, there may be a chiropractor out there who practices hands-on techniques just like I do. The main difference, clearly, then, if the treatments are the same, is in the training. DOs go through 4 years of medical school. We each do a residency in a specialty, whether it's family medicine or general surgery or pediatrics. And the intention with osteopathic philosophy is that we will utilize those hands-on tools regardless of what specialty we go into. And that's what I train my students to do. Whether you're an emergency room physician, a general surgeon, a pediatrician, there's utility in hands-on techniques regardless of where you go. And the patients, they feel better. They feel like they've gotten something. They feel like you're doing something other than, you're doing something in addition to help the body heal other than just giving a prescription or doing a procedure. It changes the way patients perceive their care.
And it's also good for all kinds of ages. Like, let's think of something specific that, of course, all physicians see quite a bit of, and that would be ear infections in children.
Yep.
So you probably have young patients coming in as well, since you're a family physician.
I do.
What kind of approach would you take with a child? I mean, it's not to the point yet when you look in there that it requires antibiotics. In fact, the medical literature says to hold off on antibiotics. They say just watch and wait.
Absolutely.
You would have a much better approach instead of just watching and waiting.
Well, you know, actually, it's funny because patients come, families come. They want their kid to not suffer, obviously, but they come expecting medicine. And when they come and I say, well, the child doesn't need medicine. We do hands-on techniques. Babies especially, you know, they've just gone through a trauma of sorts in coming through the birth canal, and a lot of times their craniosacral mobility is not optimal. And we'll see the issues such as colic or difficulty suckling or breastfeeding. We see torticollis. We see recurrent ear infections. So if we take a look in the ears of a child who's having recurrent ear infections and we treat their craniosacral mechanism and we treat their lymphatic system, what I'll do is I'll treat the patient and then actually teach the parents how to treat the patient. I have a patient, he's now going to be 4 years old, but I first saw him when he was 18 months and he had 5 infections in his ear the year before that. And his parents were on the verge of getting tubes as recommended by the ear, nose, and throat doctor. And he came in and I treated him once when he was sick. I treated him a week later. And I taught the parents how to do what I was doing. And the patient's 4 years old, and since his 4th visit with me, he hasn't had an ear infection. It really, for him, was about stagnation of his lymphatics. His lymphatic system, his body's own healing mechanism, was not functioning. In layman's terms, the plumbing was clogged. And by gently and strategically assisting that lymphatic drainage, we basically save the child from a procedure, you know, that involved putting tubes in his ears. It's just such a logical, you know, makes so much sense. And
now,
is there something
more physical? Like, for instance, I know a young boy who has a hernia, and he's only 3 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know of any actual natural way to deal with that other than surgery. So
There are some things that, you know, that need to be surgically corrected, and that's why we have our surgeons who train so hard and learn to be so precise and so technically skilled that you know, some things such as hernias do require surgical correction. There's a lot of things that do require intervention. But like you mentioned, the watch and wait, or the let's try all of the basic natural stuff that we have. When my patients come in, I talk to them about four principles. I talk to them about diet, exercise, sleep, and stress. And I think that if you have control and you're educated in those four aspects of your life, you can pretty much control how your health goes. Sleep and stress management are such unbelievably underrated and underappreciated aspects of your life. If you're not sleeping, you're not creating any of the hormones and chemicals that your body needs to heal itself. And so many patients are walking around with disordered sleep, and they're wondering why their blood sugars are not controlled, why they're overweight, why they're chronically exhausted, why they get recurrent infections. And when all the labs show up normal and they say, but doc, all of my tests are normal, everything is, it looks fine, there's something wrong with me and I still don't feel well, inevitably sleep is a factor. And if we can address sleep hygiene and change the way the patients are exercising and what they're putting in their bodies, and, you know, it will change the quality of their sleep, which will therefore affect the quality of their life. So
that's a great example. You know, I'd like to go into sleep a little bit more deeply, but we're just going to take a few minute break right here again, because we like to tell everybody about all the fabulous shows that we have here on Progressive Radio Network. But when we come back, sleep is a great topic, because issues with sleep span so many generations. And we talked a little bit about children with ear infections, and of course, elderly really have a lot of sleep challenges. So when we come back, we will continue our discussion with Dr. Alexis Hugelmeier of the SUA Center, and we'll be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Welcome back once again to more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z on Progressive Radio Network, PRN.FM. And our guest today is Dr. Alexis Hugelmeier. I do want you to know that you can find her at the SUA Center. That's the SUA, S-U-A-H, center.com. And also Facebook, the SUA Center. I will give the phone number as well, which is 631-963-4760. And I'd like to remind you that you can visit with both Dr. Hugelmeier and myself, Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, at the Naval Expo. And you can find out more at navalexpo.com. Get directions. It's at an easy-to-get-to location, which is the Huntington Hilton. It's twice every year, coming up real soon. And we'd love to see you there and say hello. Now, we've been talking to Dr. Alexis Hugelmeier about her practice, which is family-centered and whole life-centered, really a wonderful way for people to get a choice as well as a voice in their own health care. So thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Hugelmeier.
Thank you, Ellen.
Now, you talked about sleep as being a pillar. I mean, you don't think, okay, get some sleep. I mean, it's one of your pillars in your treatment protocol. So you must be very convinced of how important it is. And we talked a little bit about younger children and some of their health challenges. But we find that really universally, as people age, they seem to have problems with either falling asleep or staying asleep.
It's true. Most people actually don't know. You think that sleep is just something, oh, you just, you know, close your eyes and go to sleep. It's something that is natural and it should be involuntary. When you're tired, you sleep. But most people don't really have any idea that proper sleep hygiene is crucial, making sure that the environment in which you sleep and the routine and the certainly affects the quality of your sleep. Most people, like I said, just think that you just go to sleep and that's it. And through interviewing patients and by questioning them regularly about the quality of their sleep, I found that the majority of patients do struggle, either with falling asleep or staying asleep. That will become worse, or sleep disorders will be exacerbated by certain life changes, hormonal changes for sure. And as you mentioned, as patients get older, it seems like sleep disorders are intrinsic part of an aging, which they should not be. But what I find is that most often they are related probably to medication side effects. We'll have patients come in on a list of 15 medicines, and they say, I can't sleep, and I'm getting older, and it's just part of aging, and that's just not true. Just because you're getting older doesn't mean that your sleep quality should change. Every person is different. Every person needs a different amount of sleep. But, you know, your approach to your quality of sleep is crucial in keeping yourself well and preventing yourself from becoming ill down the road. It's definitely underdiagnosed. It's underassessed. We don't typically routinely screen for sleep disorders. When a patient comes in, they say, I'm tired. What do they get? They get Ambien. Or they get Lunesta. And we don't talk about, well, are you going to sleep with your cell phone next to your bed? Is there any blue light in your room? Are there any extraneous noises? Are you watching TV before sleep? Are you eating dinner too close to bedtime? Are you drinking alcohol too close to bedtime? And that's a big one, because a lot of people will use alcohol, maybe a glass of wine or something before bed to help them get to sleep. But they still come in and they say, yeah, well, I drink a glass of wine and I fall asleep fine. But what happens is about, you know, 2 to 4 hours after they drink that glass of wine, it's metabolized into sugar. And they wake up at 2 a.m. and they can't fall back asleep. So asking these questions about what you're doing, what is your lifestyle, what is your approach to sleep? And people say, I don't have an approach to sleep. I just get tired and I lay down and go to sleep. But inquiring about those specific parts of your evening, your routine, whether you're waking up in the middle of the night or you wake up at, you know, 4 a.m. and can't fall back to sleep, or if you're having trouble falling asleep, there's reasons for that. There's a reason.
Well, can it be linked at all to hormones? Because I notice one specialty you have, and people are always asking me where they can find this, is looking into bioidentical hormones, because certainly there are hormonal changes as people do age.
And it's actually not just a part of aging. Hormonal symptoms of hormonal imbalance can be seen, you know, as early as puberty. And we have teenagers, you know, coming in with symptoms of hormonal imbalance all the way through, you know, starting with acne and mood swings, menstrual irregularities, and then going up to postpartum depression. Of course, the common symptoms of perimenopause, and in males, andropause, when your hormone levels, you know, start to decline after your childbearing years are over. Certainly at certain landmarks, at certain milestones in your life, there are expected hormonal changes, but I think hormonal imbalance is also underassessed. In fact, many women come to my office with complaints of fatigue, irritability, low libido, thinning hair, symptoms that, to me, the lights go off for hormones, but they're maybe erroneously treated for problems with brain chemistry by being placed on Prozac or Lexapro, or, you know, treated for depression, when, in fact, a hormone history or questioning about hormonal balance has never actually been done. So I think a lot of times with perimenopausal women, sleep, lack of energy, low libido, mood instability, I think we're so quick to treat depression as perimenopause, as opposed to addressing the hormonal imbalance.
Yeah, and that's something that can really help. So what is the difference in bioidentical hormone intervention, both for men and women, versus conventional hormonal intervention?
Conventional hormone replacement therapy has kind of been through the ringer. Based on the research study that came out in the 1990s from the Women's Health Initiative. And actually, if you read through the science, you'll realize that there's a lot of myths surrounding it and there's a lot of unnecessary fear. But to highlight the differences, conventional hormone replacement therapy, they're synthetic molecules. They're derived in a lab, and they're molecularly different than the hormones that our bodies make. The estrogens, the progesterones, and the testosterones. Whereas bioidentical hormones, or human identical hormones, are plant-derived and are molecularly identical to the hormones that our bodies make. So therefore, our bodies don't recognize them as something different and foreign. We have receptors in our bodies for natural estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. We do not have receptors for synthetic hormones. And so there's question as to, you know, competition. Do we, you know, are these hormones doing us more harm than good? The synthetic hormones, there are people who continue to use them, and there are people who continue to benefit from them. But in my practice, I prefer the natural bioidentical hormones, you know, as a means of addressing those imbalances. And we see it. It's really responsible for a lot of the symptoms that are, you know, inaccurately diagnosed as depression or anxiety or some other medical syndrome that is not related to hormones.
So would you check someone first to see what their levels were, or would you just go by a symptom picture to decide the amount that you might use for the bioidentical hormones?
Actually, the dosing is pretty standard. I trained with a woman named Dr. Erica Schwartz in Manhattan, who's wonderful. She's revolutionizing the perception of hormone replacement therapy, and she's really doing patients a great service by clarifying and bringing to light how safe and how helpful these hormones can be. The way that I was trained was really to use the numbers only as a baseline, to utilize it to compare to see how we're doing, not really to determine the dosing. The dosing depends on the patient. How is the patient feeling? If their symptoms are not well controlled, then we're not using enough. If they have symptoms of excess, then we have to cut back. And I think I said this to you before, but one of my favorite sayings comes from Dr. Schwartz, and she said, medicine started to really change and go downhill when we stopped listening to what the patient was saying. And we started listening to the malpractice companies and the insurance companies and the drug companies. And if we go back and look at the patient and listen to the patient, they'll tell us. They'll tell us whether what we're doing is helping or not. They'll tell us if their dosage of hormones is enough or too much. And we really have to use the numbers, the labs, the imaging studies as supportive evidence, is documentation that helps us assess how we're doing. But in essence, it's the patient who tells us how well they're doing.
Well, excellent information, and we're so happy to have you right on Long Island in Riverhead at the SUA Center. People can actually call to make an appointment, and that's exciting because of the way that you are having a truly holistic, family-centered practice, looking at each individual, taking time with each person, and using natural remedies first, but having conventional therapies available as well if that's what that patient needs. So it's a very individualistic approach. What is the best way for people to find you, Dr. Hugelmeyer?
The most information about the practice, our services, our practitioners is on our website, and that is www.thesuacenter.com, and it's S-U-A-H. thesuacenter.com. You can find phone numbers and forms. You can see some photos of the office and read bios about all of the different practitioners, including our physicians, our Reiki practitioners, our acupuncturist, nutritionist, all of the holistic health services that we provide here.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in once again. And I'll tell you that this show will be archived at prn.fm, and you can find Dr. Alexis's contact information there if you didn't get a chance to jot it down. And you can also see us both lecturing at the Naval Expo. Go to navalexpo.com for times and directions. And, of course, you can always find us at naturalnurse.com or Facebook, The Natural Nurse. For Ellen Kamma, yours truly, The Natural Nurse, and my co-host, Dr. Eugene Zamperone, we're wishing that you stay healthy.